Back here on Downtown on a Tuesday afternoon. A little basketball talk coming up here as we welcome in our friend John Corrales of Boston Sports Journal and the Locked On Celtics podcast. What in the world was going on in the NBA last night with 70 from Joel Embiid and 62 from Karl Anthony Towns?
I think this 24-hour stretch between those two guys going absolutely crazy and then the head coach already getting fired and a trade and all that stuff, it's a wild, wild 24 hours in the NBA. That's off, or kicked off, I should say, by Joel Embiid not only scoring 70, going to the line 23 times. Are you kidding me? It's incredible, incredible amount of scoring. I love Kevin Durant's reaction afterwards, saying that this is like peak NBA right now. There's just the level of scoring, the level of, you know, ability of what everybody can do at the sizes that they are, and the schemes and all that stuff. It's an incredible time to be watching the NBA.
Well, it sure is, and a whole lot of fun watching the Celtics, too, who continue to look very much like a championship-caliber team. Last night, as you pointed out, maybe not a perfect fourth quarter, but pretty darn good.
Pretty darn good, and especially because they didn't have Kristaps Porzingis, who has been their kind of go-to fourth quarter matchup issue, and to get that kind of response from Jalen and Jason without them reverting to some of the things that we've seen them do, I think that's the really impressive part, because we know that, especially in a situation where they're tired, it's 11 games in 18 nights is a ridiculous amount of basketball to have to play, regardless of how much money you make. I mean, the human body is what it is. And for them to, on a third night and four nights, a third game and four nights, and a back-to-back, and to not fall into old habits, to not fall into their worst. I mean, I know, just me, when I'm exhausted, I'm like, you know what? I am going to have that slice of pizza. I am going to have that beer. You very easily fall into some of those bad habits. And they could have, and understandably could have, and they didn't. And they led this team to a really good quality, I'll even say playoff quality, because it's going to get griming in the playoffs like that. They came up really big for the Celtics.
And that's just, yeah, as you said, that's just hard work and hustle at that point in the game.
Yeah, they are a very tired basketball team right now. They can't even hide it, really. They talk about it after every game. They talk about how this is the point in the schedule where it's very tough. This is the point where they have to focus and they have to power through. And by and large, they have, the Milwaukee game notwithstanding, they have generally responded well. And Joe said, like, that's the only game where he could tell the schedule had caught up to them. So that's really good. Just putting your head down, focusing, working, guys like Peyton Pritchard getting in there and getting offensive rebounds, all of these different players pitching in. Even when you don't have a big shooting night, Derek White playing the defense, Drew Holiday picking up the scoring, all of those things. It's just really, really good to see against a team with two closers, two superstars that can really close out a game. Very impressive defensive stand down the stretch there in the fourth quarter.
And they continue to avoid playing really two bad games in a row. And I was thinking over the weekend, too, that the loss at the Garden maybe wasn't all that bad, because you get deeper into the season, that zero in the loss column there, it sometimes becomes a bit of an albatross. Get that one out of the way now.
Yeah. I mean, I can see the pressure of coming in. And, like, Joe, before the game last night, was talking about narratives. And you don't want to get caught up in, you know, you put a bunch of narratives up on the board and you say, well, we can get caught up in back-to-back. So you can get caught up in Kyrie and all of this other stuff. You want to avoid that as much as possible. And so, hey, if no one expected the Celtics to go 41-0 at home. So, hey, sometimes you need a loss. Sometimes you need to get knocked down. so you can remember what it's like to get knocked down and it, you know, lights a little bit of a fire under you. So, look, that you could easily go back to that Denver game and say it was a little bit of an aberration. They had, if things had gone a little bit more normally, they might have won that game. But regardless, it was what it was, and you're right. A little kick in the butt every now and again. Get that loss out of the way. Not the worst thing in the world.
We're talking with John Corrales here on Downtown. So the Heat on Thursday and the Clippers on Saturday. So a little bit of a break, but not much. It's still a tough schedule this time of year and this month of January.
Yeah, and you know, one last road game before seven home games, which is nice. But in that seven home games is another three-game and four-night stretch. So they have to be mindful of that. But on top of that, they get Miami with probably their new guard, Terry Rozier, which is going to be an interesting debut. How do they use him? How does that fit? Does that hurt them? Do they catch Miami at the right time trying to integrate Rozier? And, you know, a few mistakes will get them an opportunity to get a win. So that'll be tough. But, you know, Miami's going to be very tough with Rozier. He adds a lot of what they need. And you just got to think that Miami, with their culture, that vaunted Heat culture, they're going to get better. So it's an interesting kind of shakeup there in the middle of the East. We'll worry about that part later. I guess the Celtics can hopefully get past this little stretch where Miami's going to start figuring themselves out. But then, like I said, they come home. The Clippers is not going to be an easy game. Clippers are going to want to get revenge because they had one of those scheduled losses against the Celtics. And so they're going to want to get revenge. And so it's going to be the Celtics, no matter what, no matter where in the schedule they are, they're still going to have to earn it.
I was thinking about Eric Spoelstra the other day, and I don't know, maybe Pat Riley knew this at the time, but I certainly didn't expect Eric Spoelstra to turn into what he's become, which is certainly not just one of the great coaches in the league now, but I think in league history.
Oh, yeah, Hall of Fame guy. You know, here's a guy that was in their video room patrolling their sidelines, part of a rebuild, and then all of a sudden they get LeBron James and Chris Bosh, and there were calls to fire him. And he had the backing of Pat Riley. And sometimes it just takes that much. It takes the backing of the front office to get the players in line and say, hey, you better fall in with what this guy is selling, or else, you know, he's not going to be the one that goes. So sometimes a leader needs to have the backing of his bosses to be effective. And if he doesn't have that, then he can be undermined and things can go awry pretty quickly, especially in the NBA with a lot of egos, a lot of big stars out there thinking that they could pull all the strings. If it's shown to them that they can't, then the coach has a chance. And that's why I wrote recently about Joe Mazzulla. Like, he has a chance to kind of thrive in Boston, because no matter what, and I'm not saying any of the players have said anything, but no matter what's being said about him, he has Brad Stevens' support, he has ownership support, and that's allowing him to be himself. And I think you see the difference between Mazzulla last year and Mazzulla this year, and the confidence that he's coaching with, and the confidence the guys have in him. I think it's showing up on the floor.
Well, so here we are well into the second half of the season now. Does this team have a need? Is there a glaring weakness that they need to address?
I don't know about glaring. Every team can get better in the NBA. So if there's a big guard that they can, or a big wing that they can throw in there that can handle the ball a little bit, then fine. I don't know where they're going to get them, but fine. Yeah, sure. If they want to get another big man, sure, fine. Like, that could help. Got to be careful not to upset what's being built here, what's been built already. And that's the most difficult part for Brad Stevens. You're not going to change this rotation. You're not going to change this starting five. You're not going to change Al Horford. So then you got to go beyond that. And how do you add to that without really threatening that locker room, threatening the balance? And that's where it's really difficult. And you got to be sure if who you add is worth staying over the second apron, because if you stay over the second apron for too long, this has nothing to do with money. It hinders your ability to make moves later on. It freezes draft picks. It really locks you into a spot where you can't make trades next year or the year after. It makes things very, very difficult. So beyond money, beyond taxes, you've got to be sure that you're willing to put that future Celtics at risk to make a go-for-it move now. If the guy you get, whichever place you go, front court, back court, you got to make sure that that's really, really worth it. And that's where I struggle to say, yeah, they have a need that's so glaring that it's absolutely worth it. I don't know that they do. I think they can go into the playoffs as currently constituted and have still the best chance of winning a championship.
Great stuff right there. As always, John Corrales, Boston Sports Journal. John, thanks so much, and we'll check in with you again next week.
Okay, thank you, buddy. Always a pleasure.
You got it. We're about 16 to go before the top of the hour.